Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what to happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay. Hopefully you guys got a clear audio of that. It was kind of choppy on this end. In any event, today, our jump off topic is available about no crime prevention, AP, and $3 million. The $3 million mindset. Once again, I jump off topic today, and this is all on trust, mental, all on my thing. World Crime Prevention. AP stands for Adverse Possession and the $3 million mindset. Got some interesting and fresh new audios for you today. And our program notes on this, these topics, World Crime Prevention, AP, which stands for Adverse Permission and the $3 million mindset, is on our scrolling marquee right here on blog. So 619-768-2945 is a call-in number. Just press 1 if you want to chime in with any comments. Okay. So Let me play this audio, see if I can get a reaction out of some people.
Tonight, Fox 31 trying to get to the bottom of a viral controversy in El Paso County involving a black rancher claiming to be terrorized by his white neighbors and others in the predominantly white neighborhood.
And the allegations involve trespassing, vandalism, racial slurs, brandishing weapons, and animal cruelty. And the story taking another twist yesterday when that rancher was arrested.
Fox 31's Talia Cunningham has been working this story for weeks now, joins us now with what she's been learning from both sides tonight. Talia.
Well, Erica, Jeremy, Courtney Mallory and his wife, Nicole, were displaced in Hurricane Harvey, moving to El Paso County to start a new life. So their American dream quickly turned into a nightmare for them, telling me they've been harassed, chased, had their animals mutilated, and even more, things escalating in recent weeks as they become more vocal online. So I talked to Courtney about 3 weeks ago before he was arrested, and he told me that he feared for his life. Now, we do want to warn you at home.
Okay, I can't hear anything.
Early Monday morning, Courtney Mallory was taken into custody.
Farming while black in America.
The rancher's story, one that's taken over social media.
We don't want to become a hashtag.
Nicole, a Marine, and her husband bought Freedom Acres Ranch in 2020. The couple claiming they face repeated acts of domestic terrorism by white residents on their own property. They say their dogs have been poisoned.
Yeah,
numerous farm animals have been slaughtered and gutted. Residents have been trespassing on their land, running over fence posts, burning their Black Lives Matter flags, spray painting racial slurs on their land, even waving guns at them. Photos show unknown vehicles blocking the couple's property and parking on their land. Even social media posts inquiring about pitchforks and fire sticks.
Lynching us, bringing a lynching mob, having a public hanging, fire. They wanted to lock us in and set us ablaze.
Mallory said they've called the sheriff's office countless times over the last 2 years, but have gotten no action or thorough investigations.
It is in fact El Paso County Sheriff's Office that is the main reason that we do not feel safe on our property.
The sheriff's office says they've investigated 19 different complaints and have responded to over 170 calls for service at Freedom Acres. In a statement, they claim the office vehemently denies all these allegations.
We're watching. The world is watching. Get it right.
Now a coalition pushing for social justice and the couple's safety, including the NAACP.
That's ridiculous. You know, at the end of the day, law enforcement should show up for everyone.
The National Association of Real Estate Brokers.
This is a direct violation of the Fair Housing Act.
And the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Colorado Holiday Commission.
Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Courtney was arrested yesterday, charged with stalking, petty theft, and tampering with the utility meter. His wife charged with the same crimes. Now she paid a $2,000 bond and was released. However, Courtney was not.
It looks like a bait and switch.
Activists and concerned citizens demanding answers last night, gathering at the detention center, conducting their own welfare check. Courtney appeared before a judge today, and his bond was increased to $6,000 and was paid for by the NAACP. He should be out of jail at this hour.
And I actually just received a text. Courtney is, in fact, out of jail tonight. We've also learned that his neighbor was arrested last year for violating a restraining order that he took out against her. And surprisingly, those same neighbors filed a restraining order this morning against Courtney. There's a lot of ongoing and previous protective orders out at this time between these two neighbors. Of course, this is a story we will continue to follow up right here on Fox 31. Erica.
Okay, hopefully you guys can hear me out there. I got booted out of my own show 5 or 6 times. Okay, but that happens on occasion here on Blog Talk. All right, hopefully we still have an audience. And let's start all over again. Today's live stream is titled World Crime Prevention and the $3 Million Mindset. I'll read it again. World Crime Prevention, AP, which stands for Adverse Possession. We're going to do a quick little law study on that. This is all tied in together. And a $3 Million Mindset, okay? And this came to my attention by one of our listeners earlier this morning, and let me go to now let's take the first term that we talked about here, rural crime prevention. All right, because I advocate particularly for Black Americans or actually, anybody. You know what? Get off the grid. Get out of the city. Get out of these bigger cities and go to a rural area. Okay, now, will it be Shangri-La or Utopia? It could be if you have to do some things to obtain that level of peace and tranquility and community harmony. Let's see. Hold on. I got to get an audio for you. Okay. Wait a minute. I couldn't pass it. Here we go. All right. Let me play the first audio.
Tonight, Fox 31, trying to get to the bottom of a viral controversy in El Paso County involving a Black rancher claiming to be terrorized by his white neighbors and others in the predominantly white neighborhood.
And the allegations involve trespassing, vandalism, racial slurs, brandishing weapons, and animal cruelty. And the story taking another twist yesterday when that rancher was arrested.
Fox 31's Talia Cunningham has been working this story for weeks now, joins us now with what she's been learning from both sides. Tonight, Talia.
Well, Erica, Jeremy, Courtney Mallory and his wife, Nicole, were displaced in Hurricane Harvey, moving to El Paso County to start a new life. So their American dream quickly turned into a nightmare for them, telling me they've been harassed, chased, had their animals mutilated, and even more, things escalating in recent weeks as they become more vocal online. So I talked to Courtney about 3 weeks ago before he was arrested, and he told me that he feared for his life. Now, we do want to warn you at home that some of this content may be considered graphic.
I'm being arrested.
arrested.
Early Monday morning, Courtney Mallory was taken into custody.
Farming while black in America.
The rancher's story, one that's taken over social media.
We don't want to become a hashtag.
Nicole, a Marine, and her husband bought Freedom Acres Ranch in 2020. The couple claiming they face repeated acts of domestic terrorism by white residents on their own property. They say their dogs have been poisoned. Numerous farm animals have been slaughtered and gutted. Residents have been trespassing on their land, running over fence posts, burning their Black Lives Matter flags, spray painting racial slurs on their land, even waving guns at them. Photos show unknown vehicles blocking the couple's property and parking on their land. Even social media posts inquiring about pitchforks and fire sticks.
Lynching us, bringing a lynching mob, having a public hanging. Fire. They wanted to lock us in and set us ablaze.
Mallory said they've called the sheriff's office countless times over the last 2 years, but have gotten no action or thorough investigations.
It is in fact El Paso County Sheriff's Office that is the main reason that we do not feel safe on our property.
The sheriff's office says they've investigated 19 different complaints and have responded to over 170 calls for service at Freedom Acres. In a statement, they claim the office vehemently denies all these allegations.
We're watching. The world is watching. Get it right.
Now a coalition pushing for social justice and the couple's safety, including the NAACP.
That's ridiculous. You know, at the end of the day, law enforcement should show up for everyone.
The National Association of Real Estate Brokers.
This is a direct violation of the Fair Housing Act.
And the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Colorado Holiday Commission.
Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Courtney was arrested yesterday, charged with stalking, petty theft, and tampering with the utility meter. His wife charged with the same crimes. Now she paid a $2,000 bond and was released. However, Courtney was not.
It looks like a bait and switch.
Activists and concerned citizens demanding answers last night, gathering at the detention center, conducting their own welfare check. Courtney appeared before a judge today, and his bond was increased to $6,000 and was paid for by the NAACP. He should be out of jail at this hour.
And I actually just received a text. Courtney is, in fact, out of jail tonight. We've also learned that his neighbor was arrested last year for violating a restraining order that he took out against her. And surprisingly, those same neighbors filed a restraining order this morning against Courtney. There's a lot of ongoing and previous protective orders out at this time between these two neighbors. Of course, this is a story we will continue to follow up right here on Fox 31. Erica.
All right. First things first, now I don't know the complete backstory because they don't have it on there, but there is a legal issue at stake that was mentioned in the little clip that you just heard, but none of the newscasters picked up on it. None of them picked up on it. And apparently, the two black folks involved, they're not aware of it either. So what they've done is what, and I'm talking about the media, including the reporters that you just heard, what the mainstream media that has picked up on this story, and social media people who have picked up on this story, you got it wrong. The root of, now, and this is what we do in this country. Here's the legal issue. The real issue at this, the heart of the issue in this, and I'm going to play this video maybe a couple more times so you guys see. The real issue here, and that's why I have on a program title, AP. AP stands for adverse possession. A lot of people think, particularly, a lot of people in there know, I'm not even going to put a color on this one, that they think if adverse possession, if you go in and you squat on a person's land for 7 years, whatever it might be, you know, in a hostile environment, as they call it, then you automatically own the land. That's criminal trespassing. This case that we're talking about here, the root of it, the legal root of it, the dispute between the two, that's why I'm going to play this audio again,
is it's a case of adverse possession. Adverse possession deals with boundaries of property. In this case, there's an easement of a road on one side of the table, they think they own it. On the other side of the table, they think they own it. And that's what adverse possession is. This is a story. It's pure adverse possession, a case at its root. However, what the media has done, as the media always does in this fucking country, is we racialize shit to get fucking viewership so we can sell more advertising. Now, let me hop over to the black couple. I'm going to see if I can get them on this podcast, because I just got one of the stories this morning, so I haven't had enough time to see if I can reach them through Facebook, anything like that. I don't know this couple, but I tell you, I know this much about this couple. They're urbanites. Well, put it this way. I believe there's a 95% chance, and that's a conservative figure. I think it's higher. There's a 95% chance that this urban black couple are urbanites who moved to a rural area and forgot to take off their urban mindset. They should have checked that wherever they came from. I'm just speculating that, and I'm basing it on what I heard in audio. They have made over 170 phone calls to the police. That's some shit that hood rats do. The origin of this podcast right here, it's my house. I had a squatter in my house, an urbanite. Somebody, they can't function outside of a large metropolitan area. So when they have a problem, they have this police on speed dial. They know all the particular government agencies. And then they play the race card and call the NAACP. I'm just speculating. I don't think this couple was born and raised in rural Colorado. Or rural anywhere. All right. Now, before y'all say I'm picking on black folk, number one, kudos to them. Kudos to this black couple. They bought 1,000 acres of land with no fucking reparations check in sight. Kudos to them for that. Kudos to them for that. 1,000 acres. Now, here's another reason why I think they're urbanites who have gone rural and they don't know the rules of rural. Remember, and they are rural crimes that do happen. Matter of fact, on this podcast, and I've had them on, Jay Warmke, who I spent a week out with his wife, 12, 13 out of Ohio, moved on earth shift. Jay Warmke is a white dude. His wife is white. Their daughter is white. Their household is white. When I was in Bill Perkins, Ohio, I was only a black person. Didn't feel anybody, didn't feel threatened, didn't feel disrespected, none of that. But they live in a rural situation. They're 40 acres in their home. Jay is from Minnesota. Jay was running for school board out in Appleton County in Ohio. Now, in this particular matter of fact, rural America, I call the real USA, United States of America, in this town, which has less than 1,000 people, where Jay has been living for decades and whatnot, with his wife Annie and their daughter, granddaughter. You have a lot of people that grew up together and they got married. That's the makeup of this particular county that Jay lives in. And I, like I said, I spent a week out there with him and didn't have not one. Matter of fact, I was the only black person I saw for a whole week in that particular place. I had to go into Zanesville, Ohio, and Zanesville's got 25,000 people. I'm sure Zanesville's got black folk, but I didn't see anyone. I was leaving, coming in Zanesville or leaving, and then I went to a more remote place that has a population of 1,000, less than 1,000 people in Ohio. Anyway, long story short, Jay, like I said, who's been on this podcast live at least twice, he was running for school board. Jay's a pretty sharp guy. But the locals who grew up in that particular county in Ohio, did not. They consider Jay, although he's been living there, and he's a property owner of 40 acres and has a business, successful business there, Jay still looked at as an outsider. And politically, the people that are in that county did not want an outsider running for any elective office. So what did these people do to these white folks? White on white crime. They did, because they got llamas and goats and all this. They decapitated one of the llamas. That's how they roll out in rural America. That's how they roll out there. Now, when you're making a move from an urban environment to a rural environment, one of the most important things that you need to do before you buy the land, and then after you buy the land, and forever, as long as you're living and breathing on that land and own that land, you have got to build social capital and political capital. It's called making friends. And low places, high places. That's number one. Number two, they went from is 297-68-294. Call person one. In an urban environment, like in New York, Boston, Seattle, Orlando, San Diego, Chicago, St. Louis, Missouri, in those cities, nobody, for the most part, owns 1,000 acres of land. Nobody, for the most part, owns 40 acres of land. There might be some exceptions somewhere, but for the most part, you know, you get a city lot. Now, you might go on with a bunch of other people and buy yourself up a block and got 19 lots on one particular street. But that's no match for 40 acres. That's no match for 1,000 acres. When you're going from urban to rural, whether it be 1,000 acres or just 1 or 2 acres, right behind making social capital and political capital. Like I said, when I go out to Oklahoma, the mayor picks me up of the little town where I have a house. Okay. Social capital and political, that's the first cards I start playing. Now, when it comes to land, whether it be a quarter acre, an acre, 2 acres, to say nothing of 1,000 acres, you need to, your first concern, and you find this out while you're building the social capital and political capital, security. How are you going to protect that 1,000 acres of land? Security. You know, this doesn't come as an afterthought, and that's one of the things that black folks in this country get all fucked up on. We're too fucking reactionary. We got to get on top of it by being proactive. Talk to the locals about security, and they'll be glad to help you. That's what happened with Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street, And anybody who talks about it now, 100 years later, O.W. Gurley and every person who bought from O.W. Gurley, the game plan should have been, how are we going to protect this up front? That's a discussion that you have on the front end. That's a discussion that you have in your political capital. That's a discussion that you have in your social capital on the front end before you even go to the settlement table. Security. Right as the pandemic was starting, I had to dump 40 acres of my land holdings I had. Now, I got 15 acres right now in three different places. I got houses in three different places. So I said, you know, well, wait a minute. You have to know where, when and where to take on partners. Now, for me, I'm in partner mode on my 10-acre slot. I got 2 acres reserved. Partner. On my 4 acres plot, which is 3 hours away from where I'm at, and 4 acres is big, it's not big. But a quarter, we're going to take 1 acre, and anybody within the community will come to visit us and call a place our Earth Forest. Okay? And then you need a camper, you need accommodations for complimentary. Because I can't handle all that shit by myself. That's just on 4 acres. So when some of you, if you go to, I don't know if you're in the United States, but go to Europe and visit some of those, old castles. Castles were basically communities. The king wasn't up there by himself. A castle is typically a community. The same thing runs with this 1,000 acres. Okay, you got to share it. Now, let's go with Black Wall Street for a moment. This is on the front end being proactive. And we're talking about rural crime prevention, but Black Wall Street was urban. When you go in there and you're building your social and political capital like a lot of Asians do today, go into a black neighborhood where there's a liquor store and you see some Asians behind the counter, like I'll pick out in Washington, D.C., because that's where I'm from. Okay. Typically, in every liquor store that I've went in that is Korean-owned and operated or Asian-owned and operated, they have at least 2, sometimes 3 black folk that are in the neighborhood that work there. And they're visible. And one place right near my house, walking distance from my house in D.C., first person you're going to see is a black woman. She handles the lottery. First person you see. Then you typically see another black dude out on the floor, making sure everything's stocked correctly. And then you see another black dude at a particular liquor store. All right, going back and forth, you know, man, and taking inventory and all that. Meanwhile, at the same time, mama son is up in there, papa son is in there, and Tyler's up in there. That's how they roll. That's how they don't get tortured, they don't get robbed, they don't get none of that. And with social capital, they help bankroll elections. For politicians who are in their particular district, on up to the mayor's office. So this couple, when another thing, urbanite to rural system. Okay, I've got some connection problems here today. And I went on a rant, but I don't know how much of that you guys heard, so and my studio wasn't populating on my phone, so I don't know who's out there or what. So just let me, I'll do a brief, what I stated before, and so this funky acting right, is my take, the real legal issue here, this case is not, as root, is not racial at all. Now, it's been made, they made it into a racial issue, but the real issue comes down to adverse possession. You have two owners of land that are having a dispute over boundaries. Because if you listen to the news report, that's at the root of it. And from there, you know, in this country, unfortunately, many people, not all people, but many people throw race in. Well, it's because I'm black. Some people just automatically revert to the victim mode and blame color. In this case, what they need to do is they both need to mutually come up with an agreement and mutually pay for a surveyor to come out there and do a survey to see what are the property boundary lines. That's at the root of this whole thing. It's called adverse possession. But what the media has done, and unfortunately, it sounds like this black couple has done, they have racialized it. Instead of calling a surveyor first, and then after you get the surveyor's report back, then you see what's what. I also stated that more than likely, because from the sound of it, they sound like urbanites. And the reason why I'm saying that is 170 phone calls made to the sheriff's department. See, that's what urbanites do. Not all urbanites, but many urbanites, particularly women, if they don't get their way, they call the police. There are people out here with the police on speed dial. When I had a squatter in one of my properties, this squatter, and I was over in Europe at the time, this squatter trying to, I guess, get somebody out of the house, called the police, made seven, they were over there for seven consecutive days. Because this particular person, when they don't get their way, they call the police. So, I'm just, you know, because the best way to handle this is when you're going out there, you need to make social capital and political capital. And the other thing I mentioned is security. One of the first things that you need to factor in, even before you get the land, is, all right, 1,000 acres is a lot to protect. It's a lot to protect. So you need to think about security first. And then, more than likely, it would be wise if you took on some partners. Take on some partners, some living partners. Okay, if you got 1,000 acres of land, I'd say 20 acres. No, excuse me. No, that's wrong. You got 1,000 acres. Take 200 acres out of that 1,000 around the perimeter and sell it to some partners. Now it's just not you two being alone. You got 20 partners on the perimeters, and they all have a vested interest. Real ranching is what I call it. Folks, I'm trying to get back to my studio here, but my phone ain't letting me do it. I'll tell you what. I'm gonna reboot my phone. And so it's going to be dead air for about a minute, for about 90 seconds. So let me reboot my phone so I can see the board. Okay. They say I'm reconnected. So let's see if I can have to reboot my phone. Okay, now let's see if I can get back to the studio. And I don't know what you guys have heard of what I said or what I said. This is one of these days, I guess. All right. Looks like I'm making some progress here. Okay, phone's not running fast today. Okay, all right, I'm back in the studio. I can see the board. All right, okay. So again, and let me play the audio again, and now let me see if I can do an abbreviated rundown. Okay. Almost there. Okay, here we go. Let me play a clip. I'll make a quick comment.
Tonight, Fox 31 trying to get to the bottom of a viral controversy in El Paso County involving a black rancher claiming to be terrorized by his white neighbors and others in the predominantly white neighborhood.
And the allegation.
Tonight, Fox 31 trying to get to the bottom of a viral controversy in El Paso County involving a black rancher claiming to be terrorized by his white neighbors and others in the predominantly white neighborhood.
And the allegations involve trespassing, vandalism, racial slurs, brandishing weapons, and animal cruelty. And the story taking another twist yesterday when that rancher was arrested.
Fox 31's Talia Cunningham's been working this story for weeks now, joins us now with what she's been learning from both sides. Tonight, Talia.
Well, Erica, Jeremy, Courtney Mallory and his wife, Nicole, were displaced in Hurricane Harvey, moving to El Paso County to start a new life. So their American dream quickly turned into a nightmare for them, telling me they've been harassed, chased, had their animals mutilated, and even more, things escalating in recent weeks as they become more vocal online. So I talked to Courtney about 3 weeks ago before he was arrested, and he told me that he feared for his life. Now, we do want to warn you at home that some of this content may be considered graphic.
I'm being arrested.
arrested.
Early Monday morning, Courtney Mallory was taken into custody.
Farming while black in America.
The rancher's story, one that's taken over social media.
We don't want to become a hashtag.
Nicole, a Marine, and her husband bought Freedom Acres Ranch in 2020. The couple claiming they face repeated acts of domestic terrorism by white residents on their own property. They say their dogs have been poisoned. Numerous farm animals have been slaughtered and gutted. Residents have been trespassing on their land, running over fence posts, burning their Black Lives Matter flags, spray painting racial slurs on their land, even waving guns at them. Photos show unknown vehicles blocking the couple's property and parking on their land. Even social media posts inquiring about pitchforks and fire sticks.
Lynching us, bringing a lynching mob, having a public hanging. Fire. They wanted to lock us in and set us ablaze.
Mallory said they've called the sheriff's office countless times over the last 2 years, but have gotten no action or thorough investigations.
It is in fact El Paso County Sheriff's Office that is the main reason that we do not feel safe on our property.
The sheriff's office says they've investigated 19 different complaints and have responded to over 170 calls for service at Freedom Acres. In a statement, they claim the office vehemently denies all these allegations.
We're watching. The world is watching. Get it right.
Now a coalition pushing for social justice and the couple's safety, including the NAACP.
That's ridiculous. At the end of the day, law enforcement should show up for everyone.
The National Association of Real Estate Brokers.
This is a direct violation of the Fair Housing Act.
And the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Colorado Holiday Commission.
Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Courtney was arrested yesterday, charged with stalking, petty theft, and tampering with the utility meter. His wife charged with the same crimes. Now she paid a $2,000 bond and was released. However, Courtney was not.
It looks like a bait and switch.
Activists and concerned citizens demanding answers last night, gathering at the detention center, conducting their own welfare check. Courtney appeared before a judge today, and his bond was increased to $6,000 and was paid for by the NAACP. He should be out of jail at this hour.
And I actually just received a text. Courtney is, in fact, out of jail tonight. We've also learned that his neighbor was arrested last year for violating a restraining order that he took out against her. And surprisingly, those same neighbors filed a restraining order this morning against Courtney. There's a lot of ongoing and previous protective orders out at this time between these two neighbors. Of course, this is a story we will continue to follow right here on Fox 31. Erica.
Okay, it kind of audio was kind of choppy on mine. I don't know how guys you got. Let me get at the root of it because I went on a rant and we had these interruptions on Blog Talk today. At the root of this dispute, the root of it has nothing to do with race. The root of it is AP, better known as adverse possession. These neighbors and the black couple, kudos to them, who have 1,000 acres, and let's say their neighbors have 1,000 acres, their dispute at the root is a legal issue, and it's adverse possession, and adverse possession deals with property boundary lines. It has nothing to do with race. Property boundary lines is the issue here. That's the legal issue. What the media has done, because one couple is black, another couple is white, as we love to do in the United States of America, we love the racialized stuff. Now, I'm going to see if I can get this black couple on this program one day because I want to get the full backstory. But it seems like they're urbanites. They made 170 phone calls to the police during this whole debacle. Bad move. How about invite your neighbors over to your place and build some social capital? If you're going from a urban environment into a rural environment, particularly of 1,000 acres, the first, actually, besides having your social media, not social media, your social capital hat on and your political hat cap on, 1,000 acres is a whole,
a whole lot to give, you know, the managed by with TV. I myself had to be in this pandemic. I had to get rid of 40 acres myself. I'm down to 14, 15 acres right now that I can manage myself. But I need partners on it. When you got 1,000 acres and they got a ranch, kudos to them for that. They did it without reparations or without government handouts, no stimulus, none of that. Kudos to them for that. But when you're going from an urban environment to a rural environment, particularly when you've got 1,000 acres of land, 1,000 acres of land, you need to think about prevention and security. The best way to do that, cameras have its place. The best security, in my opinion, particularly when you got 1,000 acres, are people. Get you some partners. Get about, okay, and they're strategic. And you sell them anywhere from 20 acres of land to 100 acres of land. Now, let's say, no, 20 acres of land up to 40 acres of land. That's about it. All right. And in other words, if you got 1,000 acres, budget yourself 100 acres that you're going to sell to partners. And you place them, you sell them land on the perimeter of your 1,000 acres the best you can. But when you got 100 partners that own their own land, no, they at least got 20 acres. That's 20 football fields. Then you got yourself a community. And while you're doing that, you're still making friends with these people they're fighting with. But at the root of it, there's all this ugliness started from, it's a legal case of adverse possession. They're fighting over a road and boundaries, land boundaries. That's the root of it. The white couple, they've been arrested too. They were arrested before they arrested this black couple. So there's arrests on both sides of the table, and the issue hasn't been resolved. You're not going to resolve it going back and forth. You got to resolve it by sitting down at the table, like Obama did with Skip Gates and that white cop up in Massachusetts at Harvard. He did have himself a beer summit or apple pie summit, throw some alamode on that, a scoop of vanilla ice cream. Whatever your flavor of ice cream is, hot apple pie. Y'all need to sit down, break bread on the regular, and pull up. Neighbor, you put up half the survey, and I'll put up half the survey. You mutually decide on who's going to be the surveyor. And you might want to hire two surveyors that you both agree on. And then after you get the results from that, then where the boundaries are, who owns what, that's what adverse possession is. This is a real case of adverse possession, which the newscasters have racialized. It turned it into something that it wasn't. And it seems like this urban couple that had this 1,000 acres, like I say, they didn't think about security first. They didn't think, oh, how many people will we need to manage the 1,000 acres? Because two people, you can't handle it. No, ADT with some cameras, that's not going to help. Your best security are people that have a strategic vested interest in land. So out of the 1,000 acres, tithe part 10% of it, 100 acres, bare minimum, to about 20 partners. Matter of fact, you might ask one of the, your neighbors who were there before you, like, you know what, we're trying to do some things here, you know, to help us learn the ropes. You know, we're new to this. You know anybody that might be interested in, you know, buying, you know, anywhere from 20, 40 acres. You know, really help us out, you know. Because so, once you got 100 people, 100 partners that have a vested interest, and you still got, out of 1,000 acres, I would say budget 100 acres to partners, and then another 100 acres, okay, 200 acres total to, you know, for community stuff, concerts, fairs, you know, whatever is you guys want in that particular community. You still got 800 acres, but now you got 100 people plus looking that's got your back. That's the one of the first things you do. With Black Wall Street, have we not learned anything from Black Wall Street? The victim stories are galore, but you know what? Nobody ever talks about that they put together a plan to build social capital and political capital with the indigenous people that were already there. And that's why I went on a rant. When you see these Asians coming to black neighborhoods with the dry cleaning shops and the liquor stores, they always hire somebody from the neighborhood. That's the best security that you can have. Take on a partner, a local partner, who has already been in the community and make them visible. But like I said, I'm gonna reach out to them, and I just found out about this story earlier today. So, but at the root of it, it's adverse possession. Y'all been taking out restraining orders. Y'all done had both sides of them have. Everybody's been arrested, but I haven't heard now one thing mentioned about them hiring a surveyor and settling this thing once and for all. It's really that simple. No, you can't say, I believe. No, you hire a, like I said, hire two. And if you got a problem after that, then, and this is what you do at the beginning of all this. You sit down with over a cup of coffee or some, you know, apple pie, a la mode, some peach cobbler. You know, have a little something at your place. Have a little something at their place. So y'all agree on, we're going to get two surveyors, and we're going to put all this in writing, and if we can't, if the surveyors can't give us what we mutually agree upon, then we'll take the evidence supplied by the two surveyors and go on to court and let the judge handle it, or you know what, go into an arbitrator. That's quicker. And do a mediation process. But calling the NAACP, waste of time. Their thing is civil rights, not adverse possession, which is a legal issue. Those 140 calls that they made to the police, or 170 calls, whatever it was, you don't do that in the rural area. You make, once again, you've heard me say this several times, when I go to a certain city or town in Oklahoma, the mayor or one of the city council members picks me up at the airport every single time. They also get me back to the airport. That's how I was able to get some land out there in the house. I go in When you go into a community, you go in with social capital, and then through social capital, you find out who you need to make friends with politically. It's the first thing you do. I'm going to play one more clip, and today's podcast is titled World Crime Prevention, AP Adverse Possession, because at the root of it, they're talking about boundary lines, which, like I say, they allow, I mean, I'm just shaking my head. They took adverse possession, which is a dispute over property boundary lines. It's on the books in black and white. At every local library across the land, it's all over the internet, man. They've taken an act manifest. Let me read the definition of, okay, definition. Of adverse possession. Okay, here we go. Okay, adverse possession, the legal definition of, well, the occupation of land to which another person has title with the intention of possessing it as its own. Another definition is adverse possession is the doctrine under which a person in possession of the land owned by someone else may acquire it or acquire valid title to it so long as certain requirements are met and the adverse possessor is in possession for a sufficient amount of time as defined by statute of limitations. So I'm going to tell you about this already because they're having a boundary dispute. Both of them have a deed. Both of them have a picture survey of that. On one deed, they have a drawing in which the boundaries are different from the other person, but they were both legally recorded. That's why they need, that's where the dispute is. So what they need to do is hire, once again, I believe they need to hire two surveyors. They pony up each 50-50. And they have this all in writing, what actions are they going to take, what's the step B, or what's plan B after the surveys come back. If there's a discrepancy still there, then let's put it into an arbitrator. Keep it out of court. Court takes a long time, it's more expensive. Put in front of a mediator or arbitrator. That's a decent arbitrator. You're going to have to pay for that, but they bring up 50-50 and then let it end right there. You saw the dispute. Look, fighting is expensive. It's time-consuming. You've had the white folks, they've been sent to jail, and now the black couple, they've been sent to jail. The NAACP's lane is civil rights. This is an adverse possession case. Cut to the court. But the media and the NAACP, which does not have an adverse possession, they just look at the complexion and make a solution. And again, if you got a 1,000 acres, budget 100. And 200 acres of it. 100 acres of it. And sell partners who have their acreages as on the perimeter. And have another 100 acres for community of Pasco County. And constantly be on the powwow with your neighbors that you've had a dispute with. As I stated earlier, I know white people that live in rural areas, and the same thing happened with them. They came outside one day just because the guy was running for school board. The locals didn't like it. They consider him an outsider because he's arisen from Minnesota. Although he's been living in this community for over 20 years, he's still considered an outsider, and he's white. So they decapitated one of his llamas. You got to think about these things before you go rural. Black Wall Street, the common denominator with Black Wall Street, and we have got to stop thinking about being, reactionary. We got to think proactive. What can we do to prevent shit? Think about the worst case scenario on the front end, anticipate it on the front end, prepare for it on the front end, and more than likely you'll prevent. You might not catch everything, but you can prevent a whole lot. Now, the next audio I'll play before I go to back to the phone lines here, is the $3 million mindset. I ran across an audio early this morning or a video early this morning on YouTube of a young lady and her partner. They're both 20 years old. And they earned $3 million within 6 months. So, and I'm playing it for a primary reason. And they're black. I'm playing it because more than anything that will contribute to your success and your protection here in the United States is your attitude. Play this, and if you agree with me, that this lady, which we're about to use, is black. She's Muslim. She's African American. And she's from St. Louis, Missouri. Her and her partner, $3 million. And she's dead.
I made $3 million in just 6 months as a 20-year-old female entrepreneur, and you can too. Growing up, I was always in like the advanced classes. In high school, I was in the AP, the honors classes. And so even being separated from so many people, even starting at a young age, it definitely made me realize that I'm a little bit different. It was a little bit hard to fit in. I'm black, I'm Hispanic, I'm Muslim. I went through so many different phases of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I remember there was a point in time where I wanted to be an engineer. I wanted to be an interior designer. My sophomore year, I lived with my dad. That same year, my brother Jamil lived with my dad, and we were always super close. First day I got there, he took me to his room, and he showed me the stack of books that he had. And one of them was called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he's like, you got to read this book. You got to start reading. It's really going to change your mindset. It's really going to help you be successful. He had this whiteboard on his wall, and it said, I will be a millionaire by 22. And in my head, like, I was thinking, like, where did he come up with that? Like, we've never seen a millionaire in our life. Money was never something that we grew up seeing. It was never something that we were familiar with. My family never had a lot of money in any aspect. I thought that it was amazing that he had such drive and could picture a goal that seemed so far off, but to him seemed achievable. Junior year, I was living by myself. I had actually moved away from my dad's, and I was living with family friends. The same year that I was living by myself, my oldest brother passed away. And when he passed away, my whole perspective on life changed. Everything, like school, the people that I hung around, what was important to me, how I was spending each day, because I really realized that life is so, so, so short. And the fact that my brother was taken at 22, I was only 16, and he was one of the closest people to me. And so I never understood why he was taken so soon. I didn't understand it. I was going through my own grieving process. It changed everything and put life into a different perspective. I really got very selective with what I was putting into my mind, the people that I was hanging around. I got very isolated. I started really just focusing on my art, on working, and really just being alone and focusing on my family. I was asking myself, I didn't see my brother before he passed away because it wasn't winter break yet, because I had to stay in school for winter break. Was school ever that important where I didn't see my brother before
before he passed away because I had to be at school. You could not even finish school and your life could be over. I have other things that are more important to me, my family, my time, what I want to do with my life. Because we grow up from kindergarten to 12th grade in school, we naturally rely on like who we are as a student as part of our identity. But what you start to realize is like all you're doing is giving power to someone else to tell you how valuable you are or to tell you how qualified you are. I didn't need someone else to tell me if I was worth doing a job or not or if I was good enough to do something, because if I wanted to do something, I just had to decide to do it, and I don't need validation from someone else, whether that be a teacher, whether that be a professor, whether that be an employer, from anyone. You don't actually need validation from someone. You just have to decide within yourself that you're capable of doing it and go for it. Once I got into college and I started going through the day-to-days, I was working two full-time jobs. It was exhausting. I spent a lot of time doing things for other people. It was like I was doing my schoolwork for my teachers, but it didn't really make sense to me. I wasn't really understanding what I was supposed to get out of it. I was nannying to make enough money to survive, but it wasn't enough to do anything beyond that because I had to spend all my time working. One day I was sitting in class and I was listening to my teacher talk, and he gave us this huge assignment, and it was a predominantly white school, so everyone partnered up into these groups, and I was just sitting there by myself, and again, I felt like I didn't fit in. I started like just wondering, what am I doing here? These assignments, these aren't helping me progress in the area that I want to progress in. They're kind of just like buffer time. They're just busy assignments to keep us busy. It wasn't really what I needed to achieve the success I wanted. And actually at the same time, I was finishing up first semester of my freshman year of college. I got an interview with this very high profile family for nannying, and I'd never had an experience like that. And even when the experience came up, I kept asking myself, like, why me? Like, why am I getting this opportunity to work for such a high profile family? I'm an 18-year-old who's not even CPR certified. Out of all people, why would they pick me? And my mom kept telling me, like, that's not the right mentality to have. Like, who cares if you're 18 years old? You know that you're an amazing nanny. You know that you're caring and compassionate, that you know how to care for children. You've done that your whole life. And then I started asking myself, would I rather learn from a professor, or would I rather learn from a billionaire who has the lifestyle that I want and I could actually learn from him in person and see his lifestyle? So at the end of freshman year, I remember we were finishing up with classes, and I was listening to these tapes, and they said people who are successful make decisions quickly and they stick to those decisions. I decided right then and there, I was like, I'm going to be done with school. I'm going to drop out. And so that same day I texted my counselor and I said, please unenroll me from all upcoming classes. And she was like, oh no, like, is something wrong? Is there something I can help with? And I was like, no, thank you. Just please unenroll me. I'll no longer be attending Maryville. If I'm not going to go to school, I have to figure out how I'm going to be a successful entrepreneur. I started reading books. I started watching YouTube videos. I was doing cosmetology. I learned how to do nails completely by myself. So after trying e-com, drop shipping, trading stock options, I finally started Airbnb, and Airbnb actually went amazing for me. I started off by renting. I actually didn't own any properties. I now have 11 Airbnbs that I rent. And even from that, I learned how to do rental arbitrage. And at first, I didn't really understand it fully, but I was learning as I went. I kind of went through the mistakes, the learning curve, figured out what worked and what didn't work. And then everyone started seeing, like, this 20-year-old girl is making five figures a month, making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a month from Airbnb without renting any properties. And everyone started asking me, like, can you teach me? Can you help me? Like, how are you doing it? If I can genuinely help someone else and make a difference in their life through something that I learned, then why not? Me and my partner, we decided to create a coaching business. Bryson played a huge role in helping in our success with Airbnb, even changing my mindset from when my brother first passed away. I was grieving a lot. I was really sad. When I met Bryson, he really helped me realize that you have to have a positive mindset if you want to attract positive things. Everyone started asking a ton of questions. So after we started our coaching business, we kind of just kept scaling and growing. We made up to $60,000 in a month from Airbnb. And then we started getting students who were also getting results. And so we started an entire coaching program. I was actually able to hire a lot of my family to work with me to keep scaling this coaching business so we could keep providing coaching to more and more students and give them more and more offers. We have done for you offers. We have mentorships. And that way there's something for everyone to learn and something for everyone to grow from. I remember when we first started our free class, I told my brother, I don't think you need to go to college, but that's just me. I promise you this month, I'm going to make $100,000 this month. June of 2022, I made $100,000 in a month. So that was my first six-figure month. After that, I told my brother, like, I'm going to make $200,000 this month. In July, we made it over $200,000. Our revenue just kept increasing as we started making more and more of an impact for more people. And in October, me and Bryson, we were like, we're going to make $1 million this month. And in October, we made $1 million. November, we made $1 million. Finishing up the end of the year, we generated over $3 million from our Airbnbs and also from our coaching. The intentional actions, the positive mindset, and actually living in what you say you're going to do, that's how we made $3 million. For most of the journey, me and Bryson we pretty much kept everything low-key just because no one really understands it. And the way that we grew up, no one really had a lot of money. So imagine going to people who've never seen a lot of money and being like, we made $100,000 or we made $1 million at 20 years old. They're not going to understand. And there's just a lot of people who don't understand the concept of entrepreneurship. When we were finally able to start bringing our family in and bringing people in and actually changing their lives, I think it was so inspirational to them. What I realized is that making more money, you're not a different person. You're the same person, but it gives you so much more freedom and it gives you so much more opportunity. So for me, I've been able to work with my whole family and now inspire them and show them that there's so much more. And this is, even them working with me now is just a stepping stone for what they can do and give them more time freedom so that they can do those things. Even being an entrepreneur and being a female or being a minority, it's definitely different. People look at you different. I walk into places, no one knows I have money, and they look at me, they kind of brush me off because they wouldn't think that I have money. Or I walk into a business setting with Bryson and they immediately talk to Bryson because they don't think that I have anything to do with the business. They just think that I'm there. But what they don't know is that I'm actually a female entrepreneur. And just because you're a woman doesn't mean that you can't be driven, that you can't be outspoken or say how you feel. If you have a dream, go after it and chase it. Don't let the people that surround you, don't let people that you grew up with, don't let your parents, don't let society tell you that it's not okay. I think a big thing is learning who to listen to, because what I learned is that everyone has an opinion, but if they don't have what I want or they don't have the lifestyle that I want to live or hold the same values as me or the same morals as me, as much as I love them and as much as I respect them, it doesn't make sense for me to listen to them because they don't have what I want. And so what I would tell my younger self would be think bigger and learn who to listen to. And then not just that, but it's okay to be yourself. You don't have to feel scared if you don't fit in. You don't have to feel like you have to conform to society or to what people want you to be. Each day that you're intentional, little by little, even when you don't know it or when you can't see it, you're building the life that you want. You have to know what you want and be intentional behind it every day, and it'll come to you.
Okay. Man, I've been having a rough time with Blog Talk this morning. But hopefully you guys heard the video of the young lady. Her and her partner within 6 months earned $3 million on through Airbnb. And I would say their number one asset was their attitude. You're not going to have successful results at a whole lot of things if you don't have a positive mental attitude. So, like I said, I would like to get in touch with that couple from Colorado and get more details of the story. But I'm just saying, from what I've heard on the short audio clip and the videos I watched today, essentially, they did not have any plan in place or in motion for security. No, cameras are not going to do it. 100 acres is a whole lot to handle for just two people. You need partners. And those partners need to be boots on the ground, particularly if, I mean, put it this way, the Amish, the Mennonites, and the Hutterites, are the offshoot of the Amish and Mennonite groups. They're almost the same. But the one thing in those three communities, and there are maps on this. Look it up online. Look up Hutterite communities, H-U-T-T-R-R-I-T-E, or Amish communities, or Amish communities here in the United States or globally. They do things as a unit, man. They do it as a community. So you got two people with 1,000 acres of land, and you don't have enough social capital to manage that. That's why I play, you know, one of the you know, on Jewish economics. You know, when one person makes money, at least four or five others make money at the same time. All right, when you buy 1,000 acres, then you need to make arrangements where, you know, you got at least 500 people that get, they might not get 1,000 acres like you, but, you know, you can break them off 10 or 20. I'm not saying give it to them. You make them pay for it. But you'll have plenty of takers that'll do it. All right, people, I'm trying to get back to my studio here. And so I can take calls on this. And I've been tussling the Blog Talk here for, and I don't want to refresh my phone again, because if I refresh my phone again, it'll disconnect the call. And I can't get to the board, so. Oh, boy. Let's see. What can I do? Wait, let's give me. All right. Okay, Blog Talk Radio, and now no data. I just checked the data. All right, now it's the data is on. Okay, it must be something going on in the atmosphere today. I'm going to run this show. This show really needs to be run clean where there's no glitches. And yeah, I'm not getting YouTube. I'm not getting. This is what I get on Instagram. Right, Instagram popped up. But it's not fully functional, so. Oh, boy. Okay. Oh, boy. Maybe. Must be something up at the tower today. Let's see. All right, well. Let me try. I don't know what to do, people. Let's see. I'm kind of stuck here. Let me see. Blog Talk. I don't even know if you guys can hear me because it said I don't have an internet connection. And I don't want to. I'm going to have to reboot again. Let me see if I can try that. Wait a minute. Okay. Oh, man. This is frustrating. Okay, mobile hotspot. Okay. Let's see if I can reboot. Let's see if that'll work. All right. Okay, I rebooted. And let's see if I can get my studio back. Blog Talk. Like I said, we're going to do this show justice. I'm gonna run it back fresh next, probably Monday. But don't go nowhere yet. I'm trying to get my studio again, if anybody's looking. I've had to reboot 3 or 4 times this today. And Blog Talk, for the most part, is pretty consistent and good. That's why I've been rocking with them for, you know, the last 9 years. But we were, and hopefully you guys heard the last audio I played with the 20-year-old that makes $3 million in 6 months. Okay. Right, I'm back, but I think I lost my audience. Okay, well. Let me see. All right, well. When I had the audience, I couldn't get to them, and now that I can get to them, I don't have the audience. All right, it's Friday. Oh. All right, if there's anyone out there, press 1. If not, I have to call it a day, I guess. Okay, well. Well, we need to do a do-over today. Okay, well. All right, well. There's some days you struggle on here. Other days, most days, it works smooth. So. All right, well, looks like you guys are gone, so have a great day, have a great weekend.